Hello, and welcome to Sobercast, where we provide AA speaker meetings and workshops in podcast format. We're an ad-free podcast, and if you enjoy listening, please help us be self-supporting by visiting Sobercast.com, look for the donate link, and drop a dollar or two into our virtual basket. We hope you enjoy the podcast. Have a great day.
Hi. Is this a joke? Thank God I did not know this many people were going to be here yesterday when I thought about this lead in my head. I'm Sue, and I'm an alcoholic. Oh, wow. So, first of all, I have to, isn't this an amazing conference? This is... And that opening ceremony yesterday, that was awesome. So I wanted to, in thinking about this, I have to think, okay, all I got is my own experience, strength, and hope to share. And I'm in a room with lots of people that are my friends. So that's how it's going to go. And a lot of people from my home group are here, so And my partner's here, so I'm in good hands. So, in thinking about this, I was thinking, okay, in a nutshell, my life went from sort of being in having benign trouble to getting into real trouble. And, when I think about my growing up, I mean, when I was in grade school and, high school and even college, benign trouble for me was, like stealing pop bottles out of the back of some business and returning them to the jewel for money, or I set a pizza place, on fire with we got kicked out of that. So, or this is in the days when the mailman used to deliver, samples to mailboxes, and then my friends and I would go behind the mailman and pick up all the samples, So, I had some rebellious attitude from the beginning, and it just sort of carried me through into, my later life. And, I started getting into more trouble, of course, as time went on. In high school is when my drinking really, started, and of course, I did drugs too. That's part of my story because, quite frankly, drugs were easier to get than alcohol when you're young. So, but alcohol is really my main drug of choice. So, as I got into more trouble, the real trouble would be, crashing cars, getting into trouble with the police. And I have to say, I didn't get in more trouble than I did only because I had a lot of enablers, mainly my dad, who recognized that, I was stealing from my place of business and they were going to press charges, and, the police got involved, and so he just paid some money, and I don't know what he did. He just told me to sit over there and be quiet, and so that's what I did. And then when I ran cars up on the people's lawns and crashed things, and, my dad would go to the police station with me and say, sit over there, and he talked to the police and paid some money, and I don't know what he did, but then I went home. So that happened quite a bit. That happened quite a bit. And also, there were a lot of forgiving police when I got sober. And I should say my sobriety date is May 20th, 1990. So when I... At the time when I got sober, or when I was drinking, what happened is that you'd get pulled over and the police officer would say, well, how far do you have to go? Or where are you going? Or, and of course I only had to go two blocks, Well, just be careful. And, next time, don't do this, next time. And, or I'd, get out of a bar and, get in the car to drive and the police would be knocking on my window. You're not going to drive that, are you? No, I wasn't. I'm just sitting here, And he said, I didn't think so. So, I mean, you know, I that's what happened a lot. So I got out of a lot of things, and I'm so, you know, I'm humbled by people who didn't. And, you know, I'm just humbled by that. So, you know, I thought that I would share my own experience, strength, and hope of how the message was carried to me. And when I got into AA, and this was another enabler, my boss, you know, she was my drinking partner. And so she's the one that got me into AA. And I think it was more like one of those 1 and 12 step things, you know, like I'm an alcoholic and you are too. Come with me to a meeting, you know? But whatever it was, it worked because, you know, I put it off. I tried to quit drinking for a long time on my own. You know, I did all the things that the book, big book says, you know, you drink only on the weekends or only at night, or I went to a health club thinking I need to just work out, I need to buy new clothes, I need to go to church, you know, all these things, and nothing worked. So when I finally got into AA, you know, I would say for a good 2 or 3 years, I really worked this program hard as far as doing the fellowship. And, you know, that was my thing. Because I came into meetings, and I heard, you know, take what you want and leave the rest. And I thought, well, I could do that. I could do that. And I got sober in May, and it was getting nice out. And so, you know, there were a lot of bike rides, and there was tennis playing with, you know, there was barbecues, dances, rafting trips, camping, all that stuff. I had fun doing all that, you know. And I didn't get a sponsor till I was maybe 9 months sober. So, and I didn't really think that I needed to do those steps because I'm not drinking and I'm okay. You know, I'm having fun. I'm hanging around all these people that don't drink and, you know, I'm doing the thing, right? And so, but what happened is all these newcomers I was hanging around with were starting to get drunk or they moved away. And so I had nothing. So I needed to get a sponsor. So I finally got a sponsor. And her name was Holly, and she was one of those tough love people who, you know, she was a CPA, and it drove me crazy because I would call her on the phone with drama, you know, my car was going to get booted, I had, you know, $900 of tickets and blah, 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 and so, you know, or some relationship issue, and then, you know, I could hear her typing on the keyboard. Click, click, click. I could hear she's not listening to me. And so then she would say, Sue, you know what I want you to do? I want you to go pick up Liz across the city and drive her to a meeting because she needs to go to a meeting. And then when you get back from that meeting, you call me, okay? And then I would say, are you kidding me? How is this going to help me with this problem? You know, and this was before cell phones and before GPS, and I don't even know who this girl is. I'm going to go pick up, and I have to go somewhere across the city of Chicago, and if you've ever been to Chicago, you get in your car, 20 minutes, you're 3 blocks, you know, and I got to go somewhere. I don't even know where I'm going. So finally, I pick up the girl. I go to the meeting. I get back. I call her, and I don't have that problem anymore. So, and she did this all the time to me, you know, all the time. So, I thought she was the meanest lady, and I figured, you know, one time I went to her house, and, you know, it was really nice, and I said, clearly she does not understand what it's like for me to be sober. I mean, you've never been where I am. Look at this beauty. She's traveled the world. She's been in all these places. You know, you do not understand my situation. I picked the wrong sponsor. So, but nevertheless, I stayed with her, and I kept going on, and, you know, then I decided that I needed to go back to school because, you know, I just needed to do that. And at this time, I was also struggling with my sexual orientation. I wasn't gay when I came into AA. Even though I had girlfriends and all that, but I, you know, that was not for me. And I was not going to any women's meetings, that's for sure. And so Holly just said, you know, why don't you just go and try? You don't have to, like, sign any papers to stay there, you know? See, you know, just try and see. And I did. But I decided to go back to school, and I did for 6 years, and it took me forever. And during that time, I got dry. And by the way, I should say Holly was a great sponsor for me in that, you know, she's very pragmatic. She helped me, you know, to learn how to go to the store instead of to 7-Eleven for my dinner and coming back and, you know, fill up my refrigerator and pay my bills and things like that. But we didn't really work the steps very well, you know. And, so then I go to school for 6 years and, you know, I'm dry because, you know, I'm in school now and that's my focus and I forget about AA, but I'm not drinking and that's how it is. And so, you know, I went on this way for until I was about 13 years sober. And that, you know, I used to be really embarrassed to tell people that would you believe I haven't really worked the steps until I was 13 years sober? And at that time, I got a new sponsor because somebody told me I was crispy dry and I was very offended that I was 13 years sober. And so I got a sponsor and she really worked me through the steps. And there's, you know, the way she did it, and this is what was done for me, is, you know, she said there's one step that you need to work before you work the 12 steps. And that is that, you know, you have to ask yourself, are you willing to go to any length to stay sober? And, you know, she said, I want you to think about it because if you're not, then this is sort of pointless, you know? So I did, and I said yes, you know, because my life before was no good. And so I embarked on this journey of doing this 12 steps and doing the fourth step. And, you know, I told myself I'm not going to get in a relationship for a year like I should have when I was a newcomer. And I didn't. And, you know, I have to say my life changed. And I met with this woman every single week. And she was in Chicago, it was far to travel. You know, you go, like I said, you in the car 20 minutes and you go on two blocks, you know. So it took me an hour and a half to get to her house every week. And I would sit with her and read the big book. And there's one line in the big book that completely changed my life and my program. And it was on page 22 where it says, this is a disease of perception. And when she read that to me, I said, wait a minute, wait, can you read that again? And she said, you know, what a disease of perception. And I just said, oh my God, you know, I have spent $36,000 going to therapy. And this is really what it boils down to? Like this? This is why I feel like I do, and, you know, and from that point on, it changed my life, and I really got into the program, and I, you know, I realized that this is what I need to do. You know, I mean, this, you know, when I was dry, even though I wasn't drinking, I started having all those behaviors come back, and you know, I wasn't gonna drink, but I was gonna kill myself, because it was just a better option. And, you know, now I have my home group, which is, the Away Out group. It's in Libertyville, Illinois. It meets every Friday night at 7 o'clock at St. Lawrence Church. I have an awesome group of people that go there. People come from all over the place to our meeting. It's a haven for the gay and lesbians and straight people too. There's a huge mix of people that come to this meeting. We are very focused on service and sponsorship. You know, we really work with our people. My partner and I, you know, we open up our house a lot for sponsee meetings, and we have it's just an amazing thing. And this is now how I sponsor new girls when they come in. You know, I mean, I sponsor them the way I was sponsored, the way that I got it. You know, we go through the big book. You know, we talk about service. You know, if you know, There's business meetings to go to. There's service positions in our group that you can have. I mean, it's a huge thing. And you know, the reason, I mean, you know, my disease tells me that I gotta be different, you know, and because I'm gay, I gotta be different. And this is what I'm gonna use as my angle, you know, that this is why I have to work this program a little differently. But really, you know, I'm just an alcoholic who happens to be gay. And, you know, I don't think of myself as special anymore. I really don't. I don't, you know, I'm just not. In fact, some of the members of my home group, you know, they're very good friends of mine, and they were, not so sure of the whole gay thing, you know, when they first joined the group. And then they see the kind of people we are. We're just normal people. And, you know, that, in fact, it's funny because this just reminds me, I digress, but it reminds me of my mom. My mom used to belong to PFLAG. And she at one time asked me if I would write an article for PFLAG saying, what does a gay person do in their day, you know? And I said, that is going to be the most boring article. Let's see, I get up, I brush my teeth, I go to the bathroom, I take a shower, you know. So, I mean, you know, and I think that's the cool thing. You know, I am no different. And, you know, I don't look to be different than anyone else. I like all of my friends, you know, gay, straight, you know, brown, white, black, whatever they are, any religion. So I'm just happy, you know, to be a part of this conference. And I thank everybody for being here. I never expected that. I thought there was going to be like, oh, there's going to be like 20 people here. But, you know, I see it's a, I'm glad I didn't know about this beforehand. So anyway, thank you very much.
Thank you, Sue. All 20 of them liked you, it sounds like. And next on our agenda, we have Troy from Houston, Texas.
Good morning. I'm Troy. I'm an alcoholic. I'm going to stand here for just a second and soak all this in and inhale all the hair products and... You look good, gays. You look damn good, I'm going to tell you. I'm feeling a little bit emotional, and I don't feel emotions at home alone, much less in front of all of you, so bear with me. My sobriety date is May 24th, 1999. My home group is the Cleaning House Group in the Montrose in the center of Houston. We meet on Wednesdays at 8 and Fridays at 7. I want to thank the board and the staff for inviting me to come and speak to you. If you have a problem with what I say, see them. And let's give them a round of applause for the amazing work that they have done this week. It's crazy. So I want to qualify as an alcoholic quickly and tell you that at the end of my drinking career, I drank until I passed out or I threw up. And if I'm being perfectly honest, a lot of times I threw up and felt better and continued to drink. You cannot tell me that I'm not the only one that threw up in the back of a bar and came out and said, "Hey, let's buy me a drink." Anyone? So I also want to qualify as gay in an appropriate way. I will tell you, I was in a bar one time, and I was with a friend, and there was a cute cowboy across the way, and we kept making eyes at each other, and I sweet talked my friend into moving closer to the cowboy so that he could get a better look, possibly buy me a drink, and we got closer, and I overheard him tell a friend, his friend. He said, you know, I hate when you see a guy in a bar and then they come over and they start talking and a purse falls out of their mouth. I felt so bad for my friend. I was like... No, I know he was talking about me. And, you can't tell because I was screaming last night at the opening ceremony. I've got my sexy voice going on today, but it's usually like an octave higher. I sound like a teenage girl with a bad cold. And I was so hurt by that. And I wish I could go back in time knowing what I know now about myself and about those kinds of situations. And I would have said something really snappy like, fine, I'm not taking you hostage. So I got sober on a Monday, and that's not even the worst of it, y'all. That next weekend, I was supposed to go on vacation. Now, I mean, piss poor planning, okay? That's just bad. That was a bad idea. Most of us wait until we get home from vacation and are flipping through the pictures, you know. Oh, that's so cute. Oh, my God, we were having fun. Who's he? What is that? Oh, my God, I got to get sober. No. Not for me. I'm going to get sober a week before I have to leave town. And that's exactly what I did. I got sober on a Monday. And Friday night I came home and my boyfriend was packing and he had the music playing and he was all having fun and packing up his bags. And I was panicking. You know, I had a couple days sober and I was detoxing and I was really concerned about leaving. And so I said to him, I don't know if I can go. And you know what he said? Get this. He said, I'm going with or without you. You better be glad there is not a gun in the purse in my mouth, buddy, because I would. So I went downstairs, and all week long, y'all had been giving me little pieces of paper with your phone numbers, and you're like, call me if you want a drink, call me. And so I went downstairs, and I started calling people, and it's Friday night, it's 10:30 at night, and nobody's answering. None of you alcoholics are answering. And I finally get a hold of a guy that I had met that night at the meeting, and he said, what have you told your boyfriend about what's going on with you? Nothing. And he said, Troy, you need to go upstairs and you need to be honest with him. You need to tell him what's going on. And so I did. I went upstairs and I had a little bit of small, very dramatic meltdown. And and what I know now is that, you know, I for the first time had said out loud that I was an alcoholic and that I was really struggling and that I was really scared. And he said, what do you want to do? And I said, I want to go to a meeting in the morning. And then I'll decide with my friends what I need to do. And he said, okay. So I went to the meeting the next morning at the Lambda Center in the Montrose, and the gays rallied around and they said, Troy, you can go anywhere. You can do anything. There is AA everywhere you want to go. Go. But go to a meeting every day. Every day without fail and you will stay sober and we'll be here when you get home. So I went home and I threw a bag together and we jumped in the plane and we flew to Taos, New Mexico. And that was on a Saturday and I went to a meeting that night. I don't remember a lot about that meeting. It was in a library. There were quite a few people, so I was able to kind of sneak in and be unnoticed. And I didn't have to share and nobody really spoke to me. And I left there with a meeting schedule for the area. The next night, we got home from our playing around in the New Mexico area, and my boyfriend said, "Where's the meeting tonight? Is it at the library?" And I said, "No, there's not a meeting in Taos tonight. There's one out of town, but I don't need to go." Now, you know, he had just come off of the mini meltdown, and so he said, "Oh, no, you are going to a meeting." I was like, "No." I know. This is pre-Al-Anon. I mean, he was born ready. So he said, "Where's the meeting?" I said, "It's in a little town called Cuesta." And he said, "Look, get in the car and I'll drive you." So Cuesta, just to let you know, Cuesta in 2000 had about 1,800 people. You could fit all of Cuesta in this room. And the meeting was in a church. And he dropped me off. And I walked into this room, and it was like a scene out of a bad movie. There were three men, all wearing camouflage. And not in a fashionably ironic kind of way. And I immediately started praying, "Please, God, send the ladies." And they didn't come. And so it was time to start the meeting. And so here I was with these three men. And I was doing the math. I knew I had an hour to spend with these guys. And at some point, they were probably going to want to hear from me. And so the chairperson led, and I could not tell you what he said. The other two men shared. I could not tell you what they said. And when they were finished, they all three stared at me. I was sitting on a sofa. They had chairs around the sofa staring at me. And I was just sitting there sweating. And they said, "Do you want to say anything?" And so I told them, I said, "I'm Troy. I'm an alcoholic. And I've got 7 days sober. And I'm visiting from Houston. And I really don't want to drink tonight." And what I will tell you is that these three men went back around the room and shared with me what it was like for them getting sober. And I don't know this to be a fact, but I think they shared things with me that night that they had never shared with one another. And I guarantee you the Bubbas had lived all their lives together. I don't know their names. I call them all Bubbas. I felt a peace and a serenity come over me like I've never felt before, and it was amazing. And I owe a great debt of gratitude to those three men because they really kept me sober that night. And without even knowing it, I learned that night about our primary purpose. They didn't care who I was and where I was from and who I was going to go home and sleep with. They didn't care how cute I was in my little cutoff shorts and hiking boots and white socks pressed down just so. They didn't care. All they cared about was that I didn't drink on their watch. And they were going to do whatever they had to do to keep me sober. And I left that room that night with their phone numbers and phone numbers of people who I would be in the towns that I was going to visit next. So I appreciate those men in Cuesta. So I'm going to spend a little bit more time. How much time do I have? All right. I'm going to get on my soapbox for just a minute and talk about primary purpose. It's not my soapbox. It's a sample that Suso stole from me out of a mailbox on the way here. Because she's crazy that way. So I hear a lot of times the meetings, and I get the great privilege of doing a lot of work in Southeast Texas area. I'm currently serving as the chair for that area, 67. And I get to hear people talk about that gay and lesbian and bisexual, transgender, and questioning and intersex and whatever letters we've added this week. That it's an outside issue. It's an outside issue. That gay stuff is an outside issue. And I agree. It is an outside issue. if you are straight. There's my gays. I don't know about you guys, and we're glad you're here. Stay in your chair. I don't know about you guys, but a lot of my drinking was about the gay stuff. I was really struggling when I got here. I was not comfortable in my own skin until I was liquored up. I didn't know how to have boyfriends that were just friends. The only friends that I had that were boys were guys that I had slept with and woke up the next morning and said, okay, well, that didn't work. You want to go shoe shopping? I know that it shouldn't matter that we're gay in the rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous. I agree. But sadly, today it still does. It still does. And it is an inside issue. You know, the thing for me is that, we have women's meetings and we have men's meetings. I think it's only appropriate that we have gay and lesbian friendly meetings. And the thing for me is when you walk into a room, a newcomer walks into a room and it's a lady, all the ladies in the room huddle around and they say, come on, we're sitting over here. And when a new man comes in, all the men get up and huddle around and talk about whatever straight men talk about. And they say, we're sitting over here. But if I'm in a room that is not gay friendly and somebody walks in and it's another man and I suspect he may be family, I can't run over and say, hey girl, we're all the gays are over here. Come on. This is where the party is. We can't do that. We can't do that. Because if I did that, what's he going to say? There's always that chance that he's going to be like, I'm not gay. And I'd be like, is that your purse on the floor? It just fell out of your mouth. I know that gay meetings are not essential to the program, and I know that I am very blessed and I'm very grateful to live in the fourth largest city in our country where we have lots of options. But I think that if you have the means and you have the ability to create gay meetings and have that safety place for those people that are coming in, I think it's extremely important, and I encourage people to continue to do that. But here's the big but. Once you get them in the rooms, it's got to be about AA. Once you get them in the rooms, it's up to us to teach them about singleness of purpose. It's important for them to know what appropriate topics are. Barbara Streisand is not an appropriate topic. Nobody ever got drunk over Barbara Streisand. Some of us got drunk listening to her. Maybe after a breakup. Well, it's too painful to remember. We simply choose to forget. Not an appropriate topic. Once we get them in the rooms, we got to teach them how to work those steps. We got to teach them the traditions and the importance of the traditions. And it's super important that's our job. That's our primary purpose. I often get asked by young gay men to be their sponsor. And a lot of times almost always I will say, what is it that I have that you want? And a lot of times I've heard them say, you have a long-term relationship and sobriety. And I say, good luck finding another sponsor. I can't sponsor you to get a husband. I met my husband and I can't say husband now. That's an outside issue. I can't tell somebody how to get a husband. I don't know how I've kept mine. It's not my cooking, I can tell you that. So I will say that, in closing, that I do believe in our primary purpose, and I do believe in our singleness of purpose, but I absolutely 100% believe in my heart of hearts that as gay communities, we need to be there for the still suffering alcoholic. And if we can make it more comfortable and easier for somebody to come in and just fight one demon and not all of them, then we should do that. And if the hand of AA needs to be there and it needs to be attached to a limp wrist, I'm your man. Thank you, AA, for my sobriety, for my life. Thank you for being gay, for being straight and being an ally. We love you. You're just slightly less fabulous, but we love you. Thank you for your time and listening. Enjoy the rest of your convention.
Thanks so much, Troy. Definitely the most fun panel I've been on so far, I'll tell you, or I've been in. Yeah, I neglected to say my home group is the Women's New Beginnings group. We meet in Elgin, Illinois, and my sobriety date is July 23rd, 1987. And thank you. I first got sober in New York, and no matter how long you've been sober, girls always like to say, when I first got sober, there was nothing but old, stinky white guys when I got here. It doesn't matter, but it does seem like that when you get here. And then some guy was like, well, go find some women your own age or something. And there were these two girls that, I always tell this story. Sorry, if you heard it too many times over here. There was these two girls, and they seemed to be like, they would go hiking, and they were much more fun. At least they were my age. And it was like so boring because I wasn't drinking anymore. And my favorite thing was like, they were gay. So they were like, on the edge and more fun. But my most favorite thing was they smoked pot. And I was like, oh. You could smoke pot and be an AA, you know? So needless to say, they didn't last for a long time. It did last for a while, but it didn't work out, and there were more issues to deal with. But definitely a much more fun crowd to hang with. So anyway, I know like it's been like so awesome, and good luck, Joyce, because we're having so much fun. But please help introduce Joy from, I'm sorry, Atlanta, Georgia, hometown girl.
My name is Joyce, and I'm an alcoholic. How the hell do you follow something like this? Both of them should be stand-up comedians. Mine, I'm afraid, is not going to be too much of a stand-up comedian. First, I want to thank this person for taking over as chairperson since Mike Ann didn't show up. And I'd like to thank Pierre, wherever he is, for getting me involved in this thing in the first place. You're sitting way in the back. Anyway, he was the one who asked I would participate in this convention, and I emailed Eva when she sent the invitation. They sent out these damn invitations in April. You know, what do you send out something in April that's not going to happen till July? What would an alcoholic do? Perhaps the word would be obsessed about what you're going to do. Now, in my particular case, I was going to tell you what Eva said. I said to her that I was very honored and, quite frankly, petrified. And I'm still petrified. Like the two before me, I wouldn't have said yes if I would have known there were a million of you sitting out there. which is what it looks like from up here. However, she told me, she emailed me back, and she told me that I was to share my experience, strength, and hope regarding our focus, primary purpose. So I'm not going to tell you a lot about my story, because I was told by Eva what I was to talk about. So I'm going to tell you. First, I'm going to start off by, a lot of the conferences I go to, people read from our literature. I know that's difficult, but we do. We read from our literature. Now, I don't have the big book with me, but Tradition 5 says, each group has but one primary purpose, and what is that primary purpose? To carry its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. And when you go to the back of the book, it gives you the long form of the tradition, which is, each Alcoholics Anonymous group ought to be we may be special, but we're supposed to be spiritual. ought to be a spiritual entity having but one primary purpose. This thing is bugging me. That of carrying its message to the alcoholic who still suffers. The other place we read about the primary purpose is in Tradition 6. I don't know about a lot of you, but a lot of people don't pay a bit of attention to the traditions, so that's kind of why I'm bringing up. There's some important stuff in the traditions. In Tradition 6, it says, an AA group ought never endorse, finance, or lend the AA name to any related facility or outside enterprise, lest problems of money, property, and prestige divert us from what? Our primary purpose. In my group, which is the Serenity Group that meets at the Glano Clubhouse, we also incorporate in our format the preamble, which was already read, but I'm going to read it again just in case you've forgotten what it said. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership, even though you put your dollars in the basket. We are self-supporting through our own contributions, and that's why we put our dollars in the baskets. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety. Book's done. When I came into this program, it was February 6th of 1986, by the way. That's when I came in. I neither had the desire to stop drinking, nor cared what the primary purpose was. I came in here because my partner and I at the time were breaking up, and we went to couple counseling. And the therapist said to me, I'm not going to see you unless you go to AA. Now, where she got that idea, I don't know. Except that a partner had been going to it for a couple of years, and I imagine they did a little talking about me when she was there for therapy. So, my primary purpose was to save that relationship. That's what I came in here for. I'd love to stand up here and say that the first 2 years I was in here, I worked the steps of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't do a damn thing. I went to two meetings a week, and one meeting was a group of newly recovering alcoholics. And that's what I did for my first 2 years. On December 14th, 1987, I don't remember the date all that well, but on December the 14th of 1987, I walked into my house, and there was a note that said, I've gone to a safe place for a while. Now, a while has been, 28 years now? If anyone ever says to you, I'm going someplace for a while, it might be a heck of a lot longer than you think. She left shortly before my second birthday, and since I came in for her, I didn't know what I was going to do then. But what I did was I stayed. And my next primary purpose became finding another relationship. You know, I was devastated when she left, and within 4 months I was with another woman. That was my history. That was who I was. A little bit about who I was. What the big book tells me is I'm supposed to say what it says, what we were like, what happened, and what we are like now. It doesn't say it. There's no it. It says what we are like, what we were like, what happened, and what we are like now. I'm not necessarily a big book thumper, but I'm a big book thumper. So that next primary purpose became finding another woman because I had never been alone. I was raised in Chicago. I left when I was 25 years old. Yeah. We were just there. This is not a funny thing. This is a serious thing. My partner and I just got back yesterday because we had to go up there for a funeral. And a sister-in-law of mine who I was very close to, we were a little, Anne, who was sitting here somewhere, I'd asked if she would take my place if we couldn't make it back. And that woman was so excited that we got back in time to do this. Anyway, my pattern was, I moved out of house when I was 25, moved to Atlanta, Georgia, and found out who I was, and proceeded to go from girlfriend to girlfriend to girlfriend. My longest relationship was probably 5.5 years, which was the one that left. I had my first drink when I was 16, and it was one of those drinks that I stayed overnight at a friend's house. We had a sleepover, and her parents were the parents that left, and they had a bar filled with liquor. So what we did was we took big glasses and we went in there and we just poured whatever different colors. It was really good because it was all kinds of mixture. But the first time I really drank, I got drunk as a skunk and passed out. We did what so many of you do. We filled the bottles up with water so that it wouldn't look like they were down that far. So anyway, my pattern was to go from woman to woman to woman to woman. And so, you know, within 4 months, my primary purpose was to find one, and I did. Along the way, my primary purpose changed a little. This is also not a funny part of my story. But when I came in, it was very much the AIDS thing. It was the AIDS epidemic. And we had an awful lot of fellas. It felt like every week someone was dying. I'm a little older than these people here. I came in when I was 41, and so I'm 70. My primary purpose then became helping these guys. My primary purpose then was respecting these guys because they were sick and they knew. You know, when AIDS first started, you had a year and a half to live. That was it. And so many of them didn't make it past a year. So I did get a good primary purpose, which was to work with those guys. And to watch them. They did more for me than I did for them. But I was available to them, and that was a good primary purpose, to help them stay sober. That was, pardon? They did more for me than anybody has ever done. I got a sponsor. His name was Brent. And I adored him. We went everywhere together. We were closer friends than we were sponsory. And he told me that I was to become the GSR. And, you know, you do whatever your sponsor says. He was the first one. This was in 1992, I think I became. Fred, was it 92? Thank you. 1992, I became the GSR, and my best friend Jeff went down with me, and he was the alternate GSR, and I made him go wherever I went. And then Fred came along and he joined us. But then, when I became the GSR, my primary purpose was I had the biggest ego you could ever have. My head was this big because here I was the GSR. Which is General Service Rep for those of you who don't know. Then I became the District Committee Member or DCM, and my head was even bigger than it had ever been. I had a job that I hated for 9.5 years. And I would get out of my, first of all, I was full of rage. I mean, this is by this time, I can't tell you how many years of sobriety I had, but by the time I took this position, which I believe was 96, 99, whatever, who cares, I was still full of rage. The only person who worked with me on the steps was Brent. And he was more a example than a preacher. He taught by example. He committed suicide in May of 1992 because he had been diagnosed with carpus sarcoma and was to go to the hospital the next day, and he said, nobody's going to wipe my ass. I'm going to go. And he called at 11:45 the night he had decided he was going to do it and said, I'm going to sleep now. I loved him. Anyway, get away from that or I'll stand up here and start crying. I don't think I have enough time for that, do I? I got 5 minutes? Holy shit. I got 5 minutes. Okay. I gotta hurry. I gotta hurry. I would get out of my car, pull in the parking lot, and be yelling and screaming about the dirty, rotten, lousy, foul day I had. And the guys told me later that they would give me a wide berth when I would get out of my car because I was so good. I intimidated the heck out of everybody and scared the heck out of everybody, and they have told me this since, what kind of a person I was. My primary purpose didn't start happening. My primary purpose of helping alcoholics to achieve sobriety. You know, there's a difference between achieving sobriety and staying sober. There's a difference between staying sober and staying dry. And I was not an example of a sober alcoholic. I was sober, or I was dry, but I scared everybody. Now, it's supposed to be a program of attraction. I even had the people at work asking what kind of attraction I was to get other alcoholics to come in. Along the way, a woman walked into my life, literally walked into my life, who is here today and who I've been with since 2004. And at one point in time during that year, my boss said to me, I need to meet her to find out who has calmed you down. I'm sorry, but I was a bitch at work and everybody knew it. I had to control everything and tell them they weren't doing their jobs right, even though I was the only one that didn't know what I was doing. Anyway, I really didn't begin practicing the primary purpose of Alcoholics Anonymous until after I got rid of that rage. Then I could focus on the fact that I'm not attracting anybody. I'm pushing people away. And I had to start listening to the people who were telling me how scared I made them and how I intimidated them. And that's not the way we attract people. And I was not carrying out the primary purpose. And I'm not proud to say that. I'll have 30 years of sobriety in February, and it took me, I don't know, 2004 from 86, however much that is, to finally begin practicing what I was there for. And the only way to do that, can I finish?
Yes.
It's the 12 and 12.
Oh, damn it.
I didn't bring the big book. I needed the 12 and 12. Now she made me forget what I was saying.
What was she saying?
What was I saying? Say what? Okay, I guess I'm done because I can't. You know, when God says, sit down, Joyce, it's time for me to sit down. Thank you very much.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the podcast. Sobercast is ad-free, and we'd like your help in order to keep it that way. So if you'd like to help us be self-supporting by pledging $1 or $2 a month, visit Sobercast.com and look for the donate links. Thank you very much.